This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Monday Night Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Johnny Lupinacci, weekend's over, my friend. Welcome back.
That's right. Yeah, it's Monday, and here we are, Busted Pencils. I mean, it's always excited to have, you know, the week ahead of us, but to start the week with a special guest tonight is extra. So, Tim, let's dive right into it. We have a great guest with us tonight for listeners.
Yeah, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, and we'll give him the title. Yeah, he's been on the show before. I know people listening going, really, Kevin's back? Yes, we got Kevin back. We somehow managed in the middle of doing all of the diversity, equity, leadership, inclusion work that he's doing. We grabbed him, though. He's now the interim dean of the School of Education at Hofstra University. Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you, Kevin?
I am doing well. And Tim and Johnny, two of my favorite people. What an honor to be back on Busted Pencils. You know, I listen to you all the time, and I hope all of your listeners, especially your new ones, are going to write this down every evening. Join Busted Pencils.
It is. And we appreciate that kind of support, Kevin. Love it. 855-752-4842. Kevin, in fact, you know what you could do? If you haven't already done this, Kevin, have you downloaded the Civic Media app to your smartphone yet?
I have not, but thanks for calling me out. I need to.
There you
right
go.
Away.
Because when Dr. Kumashiro downloads that Civic Media app, you know why, Kevin? Because no matter where you are, whether you're doing an interim dean stint or you're back in Hawaii, wherever, you can listen to Busted Pencils anywhere you go with that Civic Media app, Kevin. So, you know, put it out there. Civic Media app, go on, you know, Google Play, the Apple Store. Get it. It's free. Doesn't cost you a thing. And we always like to point this out too. Johnny's got some colleagues in Finland, Kevin. They even listen in Finland, which is great, you know.
Worldwide, Tim. It's worldwide. Listeners everywhere. Worldwide.
But Kevin, we, you know, love having you here. You know, we've had you on different times, but so Wisconsin, which is where the show, you know, is based, heard all over now, Civic Media, all over the entire state of Wisconsin. Last week, Wisconsin now, unanimously legislated that Asian American and Hmong American history now is mandated in the curriculum, grades K-5 or grades 5 through 12. And the work you've done, diversity, equity, inclusion, and Asian American, I was like, we got to have Kevin on the show to kind of help us break it down. But Kevin, how significant is this legislation in Wisconsin to pass from your point of view?
Yeah. I mean, Tim, thanks so much for bringing this up. It's such an interesting time because in the last few years, we've seen a whole bunch of movement to try to make curriculum far more inclusive, far more accurate of who we are in the United States as well as around the world. So Wisconsin's move follows a trend of, you know, at this point, I think it's around 10 states that have legislation that basically says, hey, Asian Americans need to be included in public, the K-12 curriculum in various subject matters even. And I think what I would say is, makes this significant is several things. One, you know, the majority of states, actually the vast majority of states right now, actually do include Asian Americans in curriculum standards. But to be able to go farther and say that a significant amount of Asian American studies, particularly Asian American history, has to be included across the grade levels and perhaps even across the content, I think takes it one step further, right? It's not just like, you know, a little inclusion here and there, but it's like a substantive study. I think that's really important. And I think the other thing I would say, why is this so important right now? You know, there's so much going on, both in terms of anti-Asian racism that has escalated over the last few years, as well as censorship around race in the curriculum. And I think these are two forces against which this kind of legislation is trying to push.
You think about that, and that was the first thing I was thinking about is, isn't it also interesting to see legislation like this pass at the same time in the state of Wisconsin, the state of Florida, the state of Ohio, legislation in other states is passing to ban also diversity, equity, and inclusion types of things that might make people uncomfortable. Like how do we make sense of the both kind of, we're going to mandate diversity, equity, and inclusion studies like Asian American history, Native American history, African American, Hispanic. And at the same time, these states are also then passing legislation calling out very specifically that any push towards diversity, equity, and inclusion needs to be somehow curtailed. I don't know how we make sense of this, Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, what an amazing contradiction. And I think Wisconsin is significant and perhaps the most attention got paid when Florida did the same thing, but it was right in the midst of a lot of anti-Black legislation like Black studies and so on that it's going to pass at the same time. Hey, but let's require Asian American studies. So I think there's a couple of things going on that's really helpful. It's been helpful for me to kind of think through and hear others talk about. And one is that, you know, a lot of the censorship legislation, don't say gay, don't talk about critical race theory, don't talk about racism for that matter at all, really is in so many ways less about the curriculum itself and more this kind of politicized organizing initiative, right? I mean, many people have said, like, this, you know, does this legislation actually speak against state standards? Well, no, it doesn't. So what does it actually do? Well, it actually rallies people to, you know, turn against public schools, turn against their teachers, and vote in particular ways, right? Getting on this kind of fear-mongering, bandwagon kind of thing. So all of the DEI, CRT, trans-inclusive policies, they serve much more as kind of a boogeyman to make us afraid. Mm. And a straw man, like this caricature of what is actually happening in schools, that I think turns people against schools. And then I would say one other thing that this makes me think about is the timing, I don't think is coincidental, that you would see movements around Asian Americans at a time when so much pushback on racial justice initiatives is happening. Because I think Asian Americans have long been positioned as wedges to prevent solidarity work and coalition building across racial groups towards racial justice. I mean, think about, you know, for the last, what is now 60-ish years that we've had the model minority stereotype of Asian Americans come along that, you know, really emerged big time in the civil rights movement era when people are claiming and pushing against systemic and structural racism. Well, what better way to deny that there's structural racism than to say, well, there can't be structural racism because look, there's one group that's making it. And maybe if all of you others would try as hard, you too could make it. So this kind of elevating of Asian Americans as the poster child of kind of the, you know, meritocracy, I think is very often strategically planned and timed. It's not surprising that you have inflamed rhetoric about race when you're struggling against affirmative action, when you're struggling against kind of foreign policy in countries in Asia, right? All kinds of things, I think, coincide to help us understand why Asian Americans in particular would be elevated in this moment.
Boy, so much there. The number is 855-752-4842. If you want to jump in, our guest is Dr. Kevin Kumashiro. He is the interim dean of the School of Education at Hofstra University, one of the amazing original founders of Education Deans for Justice and Equity. Just make sure we put that out there. Johnny, man, I see you.
Oh, so much.
Agreeing. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is great, and it's especially timely on the show and for all of our listeners, not only because of the bill, you know, on the governor's desk in Wisconsin, but also just because the conversations we've been having around that like you just said, that organizing rhetoric, raising fear, and sending like a chilling effect through discussions that everyday people ought to be having about schools, and it's so polarized. Because there is all this myth out there like, well, did you know teachers are, you know, pushing or indoctrinating our youth to be Marxist or to, or, you know, to change their genders, as though, you know, that teachers have some sort of say or influence in that process, you know. And so it's so great that time and time for our listeners out there, we have these guests on who are on the front lines of not only these policies, but these experiences as school leaders, as teachers, as teacher educators, as deans, you know, as superintendents, that keep coming on and saying the same kinds of things. Hey, what's really happening in schools? Our highly qualified folks are coming together to help make sure education is best for all children. And so it's a real gift to have you here, Kevin, sort of speaking not only to the, you know, to the elevating of our Asian American students, but to really all students when we think about this, right? This is the more we learn about how children best learn and develop, right? The more we can better serve our communities. And ultimately we keep saying, you know, that's at the bedrock of a strong democracy.
Yeah, especially that. Kevin, go ahead, jump in there.
No, I'm nodding, you know, I'm resonating vigorously. You know, just in a conversation earlier today about how the, you know, I wish every day in schools and colleges across the country that we were asking ourselves, why are we here? Like, yes. Why education? And what is the purpose? And, you know, we might say it's to prepare us for a job, or we might say it's to level the playing field. But I think our job is to recognize that schools have always been quite contradictory, that it can have multiple purposes and it can function quite the opposite, right? It can function to stabilize the status quo and inequities, just as it can function to liberate and revolutionize and transform. And I think we, including our young people, including our students, we need to be diving into that debate and figuring out how we dive into the contradiction and how we steer our education in the direction that we most want it to go.
Well, there it is. He's our guest. He's Dr. Kevin Kumashiro. He is the interim dean of the School of Education at Hofstra University, talking about, you know, Wisconsin 2 days ago, right now, sitting on the governor's desk, legislation mandating the inclusion of Asian American and Hmong American history in the curriculum, K-12 curriculum. Kevin, I want to come back too on the point where you said what makes this different is to say it's not that Asian Americans weren't included in the standards, particularly in social studies, right? But how this maybe goes a little bit further to say, no, it's more than just in the standards. It's now here. And I've done this in Wisconsin with a lot of the Native and original Aboriginal people in the Wisconsin area talking about yeah, we love it. It's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. 855-752-4842 is the number. If you want to join us, our guest, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, interim dean of the School of Education at Hofstra University, founder of Education Deans for Justice and Equity, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, international expert on that. But we're here really talking about Wisconsin 2 days ago now is about to become law if the governor will sign it. The mandate that the curriculum, this is Act 31, which is, again, it will become a constitutional mandate that the inclusion of Asian American, Hmong American studies, history be included. And Kevin, you made a comment when you first came on and said, there is, you know, in a sense, and I would say this from the realm of my original background as a social studies teacher, and Johnny's too, is saying, you know, multicultural education, the realm, you know, we've been hearing about including others in the curriculum for 30 some years. This is different though. And I was just wondering if you could kind of help people understand why this is different.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big differences for me is I was looking at this wonderful research project done by the scholar Soyun An, who kind of looks at state standards, particularly in social studies, in every state across the country, and kind of points to how you know, vast majority of states do have like topics here and there in the curriculum that have to do with Asian Americans. And sometimes it's a particular ethnic group like Japanese American incarceration during World War II. And sometimes it's more broadly about Asian Americans. And I think all of that is great. Of course, we should do that. When we mandate, however, the study of a particular group in a more substantive way, like this kind of legislation is calling for, I think it means hopefully more in-depth coverage. But I think there's also this wonderful, very positive side or additional outcome, because what is demanded of us when we teach more in-depth on, say, Asian American studies is more preparation of educators, more development of curriculum, more community partnerships for schools, more involvement of other people in education. I mean, there's a lot more that then happens that is all about building the capacity of schools to teach about different groups and to support different groups. And I think that's really quite exciting. So like, take Illinois as a great example of when Illinois said, all right, we need Asian American studies and K-12 schools. What was some of the most exciting organizing that I was seeing both within the education world and in the community-based organization world was thinking about curriculum development and teacher preparation and community partnerships for schools across the country, knowing that, you know, whether or not you have a large Asian or any Asian American students in your schools, we all need to beef up our capacity to be far more, you know, competent at addressing curriculum, but also addressing the questions that might come up. I mean, another exciting thing to me about deepening our grasp of Asian American studies is that we can then address the questions that students are probably bringing to school about things like hate crimes, stereotyping, representation or lack of representation in the media, portrayals of sort of foreign actors and treason and enemies and spies. I mean, you know, the rhetoric is amazing right now. And, you know, and sometimes Asian Americans get even lost, and we might ask, why aren't they in conversations about things like immigration policy or things like medical healthcare policy, globalization, global health policy, and so on? So it allows us to study the content. It also allows us to go more deeply in making connections to what's happening around the world in the here and now, when we have these other things that accompany legislation like this, like curriculum development, professional development, partnerships, and so on. So that's one of the things that I think is a exciting outcome. And I think there's lots of folks in Wisconsin, throughout the state, right? Given the populations that are kind of sprinkled around the state, I think there's a lot of enthusiasm to kind of dive into precisely that kind of work when this legislation gives it that oomph, that kind of catalyst to move forward.
Excellent. Johnny Lupinacci.
Yeah, I love this, Kevin. And my gears are turning because you're connecting so many dots about, about what it does when we acknowledge the importance of any group, any diverse cultural groups, not only existence, but their history. Right. And the richness that comes with schools doing more than just continuing the status quo. So really saying there are diverse communities here that not only are present, but have a history that isn't always so shiny, so whitewashed, we'll just say it, as we often hear. So I'm going to put you on the spot, but Kevin, and maybe you could share a little bit before the break. And if it spills over, we can go into that. But for our listeners that are teachers out there, you know, or educators or educational leaders, where can they, what resources do you suggest for them thinking about, hey, I want to learn some of this history so that I can, you know, better teach it or better, you know, be prepared for that curriculum, doing the due diligence, right? Saying, I don't really know that history because one, it wasn't taught when I was in school, or two, I only got a little paragraph of it in, you know, in a college textbook or in a social studies news handout, right? Do you have any suggestions for our educators out there who are like, this is great, especially Wisconsin listeners? This bill is on the governor's desk. So like we've talked about indigenous knowledges in our schools and, you know, and the history, the importance of teaching historical truths. This is part of that. And it's a diverse invitation to be a learner and a co-learner with students. So Kevin, do you have any recommendations?
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for the question. I know that there's been so many amazing curriculums that have been developed. I know that there's a huge Asian American Studies curriculum being put together by a huge coalition of scholars right now because of all this movement around curriculum. And you know, there's a mix of like books and organizations as well as kind of public entities. And I'm kind of being vague because I'm not naming anyone, because what That's I would okay. say is, to me, the most exciting next step at this point is not to look for only one or two great curriculums, even though there are such things out there. What does it mean for us to come together and build our own repository and build a website of that is serves as a clearinghouse to everything that's out there? What does it mean for us to partner with the universities, to partner with organizations, to screen the different kinds of curriculums that are out there and the resources that are available to us and the workshops that are available to us? Like, that's what I would think is the most exciting and most important next step. We can all point to one great textbook. I would say, oh, but if that's all we do, I would feel remiss. Like, I would feel like we're missing something really big. Our job is to build our capacity, to work collectively, to screen what's out there, to collect what's out there, to challenge each other and push each other to explore how we use what's out there. The collective work of building curriculum, that I think is what we want to do.
I love that. Yeah. Just thinking about that, because Kevin, I was thinking, you know, it is now the invitation is out there for all of these partnerships, collaborations to say, okay, how do we make, I mean, think about this, right? And this is the professionalism of being an educator, is engaging in building curriculum, finding our best sources locally that are there, reaching out nationally, creating those connections, and being a real professional in developing curriculum. Because yeah, like you said, the last thing I would want to see is, because I see this largely with the quote science of reading type of stuff out there, is that here is the curriculum, here is the mandate, and you will do this. Man, we're going to ask some more of these questions at Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Our guest, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro. When we get back, we also want to do a little bit more into diversity, equity, and inclusion. Busted Pencils, back after the break. We would never want that to happen. Don't die on us. It's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded Education Talk. My goodness, we want you to get through the show. Well, actually, we want you to come back tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day and just keep coming back. 855-752-4842. It's Educated Educators Talking Education. Our guest is Dr. Kevin Kumashiro. He is the interim dean of the School of Education at Hofstra University, founder, Deans for Equity and Justice, that's EDGE, Education Deans for Justice and Equity. I got to say, I was back in that moment too, Kevin. I remember doing that, you know, sitting around an AERA table in DC going, what would it look like if deans of education got together around something significant such as diversity, equity, and inclusion? And think about that though, Kevin, coming into this, you know, and you started this off, the world that a teacher occupies right now, unless a current teacher and anybody imagining that to becoming a teacher, they are truly faced with, so you're now saying in the state of Wisconsin, it's illegal to teach inclusion, and it's now mandated to include people, or it's mandated for me to exclude people. I don't know how to make sense of this, Kevin. What's a teacher to do?
I'm nodding vigorously, listeners. I'm nodding vigorously because what an interesting, complicated, like, you know, perverse moment that we're in. And you know, I also you're making me think of several things. One is, you know, the danger of a lot of these kinds of inclusion policies and legislation. There are many dangers, right? And one of them is that it could lead to simplistic, stereotypical lessons that are simplistic and stereotypical about any group, right? It's sort of why a lot of us, like I'm from the field of Asian American studies, and a lot of us, when we hear about mandated ethnic studies courses, we our first question is, well, who's going to teach that? Because you could do a really, really bad job that simply reinforces problematic narratives about different groups, including Asian Americans and Hmong Americans. So I think that's one of my concerns, is that, you know, just having the inclusion isn't always a great thing if it's not accompanied by other kinds of education for educators. I think another thing that this makes me think of is, well, first quick side note, listeners, that Tim Slekar was at the ground floor of building Education Deans for Justice and Equity. And he may not take the credit, but years before I started to form Education Deans for Justice and Equity, Tim was bringing together deans to talk about the power or the potential we might have for change if we were to act collectively. And I bring that up because I think that that's the second thing that we need to be thinking about. Like, you know, I remember when I was learning to be a teacher, I mean, we would all talk about how, oh, we can't wait till we have job protection, because then we can just like close the door and no one's paying attention to us and we can do our real teaching and be super creative and, you know, not feel like we're under pressure by sensors and monitors and all of that. But I think the reality is that our teaching is greatly impoverished when it's not approached as a collective endeavor, when we're not constantly working with each other to imagine the vision and the goals and to assess ourselves together and all of that. So, and then I think that that leads into my third point, which is, you know, in this moment, I do think we need to think a lot more about what it means to prepare teachers to thrive in repressive and censored contexts. And I remember going again back to some stories from when I was teaching. I remember a lot of us would talk about how, oh, when I get a job, I want to be in a place where I can really do my social justice, multicultural kind of teaching, really ask difficult questions. I want to be in a place where the principal supports and the parents won't protest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where do you find a place like that? Like, that's not exactly very common. It's like every place is contested. Every place will have its opponents. Every place will be limited and limiting in some ways. And I think schools of education do a major disservice to the teaching profession when we don't build up everyone's capacity to tailor your teaching to whatever context you find yourselves in. Our job isn't to find the anti-oppressive space where I can do fully social justice teaching. Our job is to figure out how we tailor our teaching in collective ways in whatever context we find ourselves in, right? It will always be contradictory in that sense. And that's what I think we want to really, really explore way more with new teachers and with our colleagues who are currently teaching.
Johnny.
Oh man, I love hearing that, Kevin. It's inspiring, but also it resonates so true to so many teachers, so teacher candidates, pre-service teachers. All three of us work closely with educating educators, right? And we prepare teachers, and we talk about, you know, what are their concerns, or we work with communities, and we're in schools, and we hear from teachers all the time, right? I'm not sure I can teach the way I want to teach here. Right. And Kevin, you remind us that's part of our job. It's not to find this perfect setting. I mean, that like let's dream that that's the world we'll have for our future generations. But that's not the world we're in right now. So we're always preparing people to work in what is towards what ought to be. And that's really exciting, because that's such a concern so many young people have, or even a myth that they're preparing to be in that perfect classroom or that school, where they can do the great sort of anti-racist abolitionist teaching that they're eager to do. I will fully say that so many young teachers out there are very eager for that. This generation of teachers coming in are capable, and they're very excited about doing that kind of teaching. But we also have to prepare them to be in a world that will fight against that. And that's really important to bring back into focus, Kevin. I really appreciate you bringing that up.
No, and you also make me think, Johnny, about how it's not just our communities and supervisors and peers. Like, sometimes we think, oh, I most want to teach with people who will buy into, you know, who will just jump up with joy every time I speak, rather than recognizing that teaching isn't sort of confirming what students already know, right? Teaching is actually exposing to ideas that they don't yet think through. And that means that learning that as a student, involves unlearning what they already think. And that can be very uncomfortable and even promoting resistance among our students if they're very invested in how they already believe. So, you know, teaching towards justice, there's resistance from the outside, but there's also resistance that we should expect with our students. And again, how do we prepare teachers for that? I think so often we imagine teaching as something that is about students receiving something that they didn't already have. And I think our job is to say, actually, teaching often involves students grappling with something that they already do have. And that resistance is such a central part of teaching and learning that I don't think we grapple with. And I'll just say one last thing, which is, I say the same thing with leaders, right? Which is, you know, we often talk about like the transformative leader who will come in and like change things. And I think that that sets up leaders for failure. I think the model we need to be thinking about is how leading is very much a collective endeavor. And it's not that different than grassroots organizing. Like it is about kind of getting people to see that things could be different. And that is going to push us up against resistance. And so how do we, it's like I often will say in some of my leadership work, like you can plan the best, you can have the best plan for transforming an institution, but if embedded in that plan or woven throughout that plan, if you don't have how you're going to address discomfort and resistance, then that plan, you can kind of guess, is setting yourself up for failure. And so working with an institution as a leader, working with young people as a teacher, working with a community as a teacher, I mean, in all of these instances, I think grappling with discomfort and resistance must be a much bigger part of the conversation, I think, than too typically happens.
It makes me think too, though, like that's inspiring work too, to remember that when I hear about this, is realizing, you know, I'm sitting, you know, I'm in front of my social studies methods class. I've got 21, you know, 20-year-old people that are imagining that they're going to be out there teaching, you know, social studies. Well, I'm also deluding myself, believing that they want to be in my class instead of being mandated to be there, but they're there. And Kevin, as you said, you know, I could either present and say, here is the multicultural curriculum that I want you to teach, and I'm in rural Pennsylvania, and most of my students imagine themselves going back to teach in rural Pennsylvania, and they could be looking at me going, this guy, he just doesn't get it. This, and maybe even Dr. Slucker, this might be interesting. However, in my town, the invitation, though, as you're saying, Kevin, I think about that, how we have to ask the students, and in fact, even invite them into and say, this is going to be challenging to teach. And Johnny, you said this, as we think schools ought to be. We know how schools are. We know what the status quo is, and we've got a vision of what ought to be. And what I hear you saying, Kevin, and if we want to inspire towards the what ought to be, we have to realize what it takes to get people to even be accepting of imagining a possibility of what ought to be. Did that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I'm nodding vigorously. Yes. You know, some of what you're making me think of is just like, I think so often we think that education is about preparing people to succeed. And I like to remind myself of, again, going to some of the contradictions that just permeate schools. Like if we recognize that schools were set up to, at first, just to teach, you know, the most elite in society, and then we think about how schools were set up and still are to kind of sort and socialize, then is success in school really a sign of like smartness and effort, or is it also a sign of that you've learned how to play the game and you can demonstrate it the way others want you to. Like in so many ways, success in school is a sign of conformity more so than of smartness and individuality and effort. And so this is just a reminder for me that, you know, education isn't and shouldn't be merely about preparing us to succeed in the world as it is. I think education should be about building our capacity to imagine the world as it is not yet, the world as it could be, and to build our capacity to like build towards and move towards that world if we're so moved to do so. And I think that's why education is so scary. That's why education is so often like the site of, the central site of ideological and political struggle in any society. Why? Because it has the potential to disrupt the status quo, to intervene against the very thing that it was built to do, which is to socialize, which is to stabilize. It's why we go after educators, right? It's why we go after, it's exactly why we go after artists and journalists and scientists and judges. And why? Because these are the groups that often are the ones saying, whose social role it is to say, we don't always need to follow, and we shouldn't always be following the dominant script. There are other ways to imagine. There are other ways to be. And our job is to build towards that. So yeah, I think that's what makes, I think, this moment an incredibly important and exciting one, and why education is so front and center in these struggles.
Oh, he's Dr. Kevin Kuma. John, I would just say Dr. Kevin
Kuma. Great stuff. Yeah. Great stuff.
You know, and yep. And Kevin, so, you know, we're about to say thank you, and thank you, you know, we'll give you the typical send off. I'm not going to say it now, but Kevin, you know, just wrapping around. So Wisconsin, the governor hopefully is going to sign the legislation, which will mandate the inclusion of teaching Asian American, Hmong American history. This is, you know, let's call it, it's a victory for diversity, equity, and inclusion. Kevin, you know, so you're at Hofstra. We don't know how long anybody, you know, books, this is your time. Where can people find Kevin Kumashiro?
Well, everyone should be looking for Kevin Kumashiro, because I love meeting new people. But yes, I do have a website, kevinkumashiro.com, and it has a lot of links, not just by me, but other people doing really interesting, important work, including on Asian Americans in education, as well as the attacks on like teaching about truths in schools. And I so appreciated being on Busted Pencils again. Thanks so much to Tim and Johnny for inviting me, and keep up the amazing work that you do.
Kevin, thank you for busting pencils. And Johnny and Tim, get back. We'll break it down.
Yep. Thank you, Kevin.
Somehow. Wait, here we go.
Awesome. We're back here. We had just an amazing guest here with us tonight, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, interim dean at Hofstra, and doing just amazing work around leadership in colleges of education around the country, and really influencing, you know, how we prepare educators around the world. It was great to have him here. I lost Tim at the break, so it's just Anya and I. But, you know,
he's rejoining. I'm waiting for his camera to be on his face, and then I'm going to let him in. He can come into the classroom then.
Yeah, awesome. Well, if you have something to say or ask, you know, call us at 855-752-4842. The phone lines are open. And, you know, we're recapping Dr. Kevin Kumashiro here with us tonight. Special guest on a Monday, Busted Pencils, you know, bringing up the importance of the bill on the governor's desk to mandate Asian and Hmong American studies into our K-12 curriculum. Another amazing move connected to so many things. Tim, you're back with us.
I'm here. I don't know what happened, as inspired as I am.
That's great stuff.
Kevin, you said, I met Kevin in 2010, I think. He was at the University of Illinois in Chicago at that point. You know, researcher doing incredible work, you know, working collaboratively with the Chicago's Teachers Union, you know, providing that real on-the-ground research for the organizing work Chicago Teachers Union was doing around social justice issues. And, you know, my connection then, too, I just stayed with Kevin. And I remember when I got my first dean's position in 2013. And then I saw Kevin became the dean at the University of San Francisco at that time. And I was like, Kevin, at this point, I said, man, wouldn't it be cool? And I appreciate that he gave me some of the props there, that, you know, if we brought deans together around diversity, equity, and inclusion and justice issues and bringing that. and his ability to inspire, to break things down into digestible knowledge, you know, so my neighbor understands it, right? Can get it. It's just, that's where you take a guest like Dr. Kevin Kumashiro and what they can bring to this, you know, and still realizing that this is a huge thing to celebrate in Wisconsin. The truly the inclusion, the mandated inclusion of Asian American Hmong history, but then still recognizing the potential problems that are there and how even those problems are an invitation to something, especially, I love this whole idea. And I think I want to play on this more and more with the show. The imagining of what could be, what ought to be, what should be, and how important that is as an inspiration and a very organizing theme of going, and if it ought to be, how much do I not know yet?
Well, Tim, dare we say emancipating education from schooling.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right.
There it is.
That courage to dream big, but to have, you know, our heads and hands in the clouds, but our feet on the ground. Right. And Kevin reminded us today of that idea of transformative leadership. You know, it's one thing to have a great plan, but it's another thing to have grassroots collaboration and organizing. And that means building relationships. And that means exercising our civic duty. You know, L.A. Tom always calls in and reminds us we are government, we the people. Right. Mm-hmm. And so a little bit of that civic 101 coming in here, right, is our responsibilities, not only as educators, but as informed citizens in this current moment where things are, as Kevin said, really perverse, really juxtaposed. We have these amazing bills to include, you know, to mandate diverse studies, right, to be more equitable about public education at the same very time as we have massive attacks launched against difference, against what we know to be healthy development and diversity. And so, this is an incredibly, you know, difficult moment for educators, but an inspiring time. I often tell the students I have who are just about to become elementary teachers right now, right? And I say to them, this is one of the most exciting times to be a teacher. It couldn't be any harder, but it could also, it's also this precipice moment where they're becoming teachers. Their teacher identities are being forged in the crucible of this, like Kevin reminded us, this perverse moment, this really tense moment where we have to consider multiple perspectives. And I love that Kevin left us with that sentiment. He shared a lot of wisdom with us tonight, but he left us with that sentiment, that good leadership around this. And teachers, educators, democratic citizens out there, you're leaders, right? You are the leaders. That is sort of the important fabric of democracy, is that we are all leaders in that grassroots strengthening of our democracies. Tim, what do you got to close us out tonight, man?
Well, you said there's so much there, Johnny. You said the moment of, again, being stuck in this, you know, the inclusion of, it made me think though too, when I read, you know, some of the headlines on this in Wisconsin, they say it's a unanimous approval that this law, you know, to include Asian American, Hmong American within the Act 31 mandate in the state of Wisconsin. And you sit there and go, and how is it? I'm just wondering, I'm not sure this is much of a show close as this is an open to another discussion. And I'm thinking about this, Johnny. How can a state or any state, but how can Wisconsin then? I would love to talk to people who have legislators, particularly. So if you're a legislator out there, this is an invitation for you to come on this show to talk about this, because if you signed on and supported the mandating of killing diversity, equity, and inclusion, you also then voted in support of the inclusion of Asian American and Hmong American, I got to understand your thinking there, because think about, like, how do you support both of those? And then imagine the kind of pain that you are saying, going back to teachers and realizing that you have mandated to a teacher a potential impossibility, which is, I'm not allowed, and yet I'm mandated to do something. I'm not allowed to do this, but now the law says I have to do this. I got to have some explanation from some policymakers here to go, how are we making sense of this? You know, that's not as much as a summary, Johnny, as it's making me say, we've got an invitation here to try to understand this moment, you know, and that's what we do every night on Busted Pencils, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We're opening the door to more discussions. And I would put this out there in the, you know, spirit of Kevin Kumashiro, recognizing the moment isn't solved. We have an opportunity to have more discussions. And man, Johnny, tomorrow, Civics 101 tomorrow, man. We'll check it out. Busted Pencils. See y'all tomorrow night.
Ooh, yeah.